Hi, today we're going to talk about what is a DEXA score and what can you do about it. I'm Dr. Valerie from Progress Your Health.
And I'm Dr. Mackey from Progress Your Health. Because we deal with menopausal women all the time, DEXA scans come up constantly, you know, as they should, right? Mm-hmm. Bone density is a really big deal. When they're approaching or they have osteoporosis, when they talk to their doctor or they talk to us, they get really, really nervous about that. And rightly so. I mean, hip fracture is a serious issue. So why don't we go in? We're going to sort of make this a little simplified because I think even a lot of doctors look at these reports and they don't really know exactly what the numbers mean. So why don't you go ahead and break it down for us?
Okay, so a DEXA scan is a low radiation x-ray that they'll do to your spine and then do to the left and the right. They call it femoral necks, but basically your hips to look at your bone density. Now there's a T-score and a Z-score. So this is where people are like, oh, these numbers and these letters and what do they mean? But a T-score is looking at your personal bone density compared to, say, if you're female, to a healthy 30-year-old female. Now, a Z-score is looking at my bone density or your bone density compared to somebody like your peers, someone that's your same age, same gender. So it's comparing Z-scores to your peers, people that are your same age, and then T-score is to somebody that hasn't lost any bone. Because inevitably, we're all going to lose bone, right?
Once you hit 50. I think it peaks in our 20s, and literally by our 30s, we start losing bone like right away. So it's like you have this crescendo or this, peak of bone mineral or bone mass, and all of a sudden it just, it's a steady decline. And like I said, we're working with menopausal women. Once that estrogen goes, they lose that bone relatively quickly.
Yeah, estrogen has a huge impact on the bones. That's why a lot of times with women, when they come to see us, we'll say, okay, is bone density one of your goals? Because hormone replacement therapy, which we'll go into a little bit, what can you do about it, is really, really nice for that bone density. But back to like the numbers and the gobbledygook on here, right? It's so the T score, zero is no bone density loss at all. Like zero is nothing. Zero is amazing. So, but zero to negative 0.9 for a T score is just normal bone, normal bone. If you have that, that's pretty phenomenal, especially if you're over the age of 50. But once you hit negative 1.0, that's considered osteopenia. But osteopenia land will go from negative 1.0 to negative 2.4. That's a pretty big, vast expanse there. But negative 1.0 to negative 2.4 for a T-score is osteopenia. Once you hit negative 2.5 or beyond that, then that is considered osteoporosis. That's where it's a little, I've seen a lot of women in osteoporosis. It's not uncommon, but that's where, you want to be a little bit more aggressive in your approaches to working on that bone density. So that's the T score. Now, like I said about the Z score, that's a little different. A lot of times they don't necessarily look too much at that, but I do like looking at the Z score is more about ruling out if it's normal aging, just because petite fair female or just getting older or menopause, that estrogen. Where the Z-score is really more intended if it's something else. Because if you have more bone density loss than your peers, then there could be something metabolic like hyperthyroid or Graves' disease.
Hyperparathyroid.
Exactly, hyperparathyroid.
If you're on steroids earlier in life, steroids can really mess up your bone density. So anyone that's been on prednisone for a long time, you better get your bone density checked because it messes, corticosteroids mess up your vitamin D metabolism, which then in turn messes up your calcium metabolism.
Yeah, so that's where the Z-score is more looking at. Is there something that might be beyond aging that we need to look at? Some genetic conditions, even malnutrition, anorexia, sure. People that aren't eating enough. You'll see,
The GLP-1s everyone's using now, a lot of issues with bone density. This is going to become even more and more of an issue as more and more people are using the GLP-1s because a lot of the weight that is being lost. Now, I don't know if this is exactly true, but I've heard with the GLP-1 specifically, the lighter someone is, more of the weight is coming from muscle and bone, where the heavier someone is, it's actually coming from body fat. Okay, so someone that's trying to lose, 10 or 15 vanity pounds, in some ways they're not doing themselves as much of a service because they're losing more of that precious tissue at a period in their life where you can't really be afford to losing some of those things.
No, because calorie restriction, it's going to It's not going to eat the fat tissue first. It's going to eat your bone, get dehydrated, and then your muscle tissue before it goes to burn fat. So if some, you know, that's where I do think some protocols that people do with the GLPs is really about, you know, you have to have that nutritional component to it. Yeah. You have to have some kind of, you know, exercise component and building muscle so you don't lose that. Because that's a lot of reason why, you know, women, you know, we lose bone where men don't, because you have a lot more testosterone and muscle mass. I mean, ginormous amounts compared to us females. So that's why women are a little bit more, are much more prone to bone density loss than men.
For sure. Yeah. Less muscle, less testosterone, and women lose their estrogen, their primary sex hormone. So in some ways, they're at a really big disadvantage that way.
Yeah, so the one thing I think the T-score is really important is you might get, so the average age of getting a DEXA scan is right around 51, which is also the average age of menopause. Yeah. So you get this baseline level of what's your T-score. Then depending on what the level is and how much bone density you may have lost or may not have lost, then they might check it again maybe 2 years later to see the differentiation.
Now, let me stop you there. Now, don't you think, though, that if you're really trying to establish a baseline for a woman, an individual woman, not based on a population, don't you think it'd be a better idea to have that baseline done when their bone is at a peak, when they're 25?
Yes, ideally, like we did some DEXA scans a few years ago. Gosh, this might have been actually more like 8 years ago. My DEXA, you know, that, what was I, what do I, what I would have been 44. I think I would have been 44 when we did that. I'm 52 now, might have been 45. And my bone density was fine. Actually, it was zero when we looked at that and we did muscle and water and fat tissue. We did the full Monty.
I think my body fat was a little too high, and I think I forgot. So I don't even know where it is. Yeah, I don't remember where it is.
But that would be ideal. But of course, your insurance is going to cover a DEXA scan until you hit probably about 51. But you know, they don't cost that much money. I mean, when we did it, I don't.
It was like $100. It was about 8 years ago. We just moved. Actually, we just moved to Washington at the time. So it would have been it would have been 2019. I think is when we did it. So, five, 6 years ago, it was like $150 to just do it out of pocket. But based on what you just said, you should get that baseline done when your bone is at the best, not when you're already 50 and you're going into menopause.
But when
that's what you call insurance for you.
Yeah, but that's when it's the best. Isn't going to be zero. So what are you testing?
Well, right, but if you did that even every decade, right,
monitor,
25, 35, 45, 55, you'd be able to see where that progression is. And honestly, you might even be able to catch someone, especially now with all the GLP-1s, part of what I said a minute ago, you'd be able to see if someone was losing way too much bone density. I think waiting until your first one is at 51.
I totally agree.
That is so silly, so ridiculous that you're going to establish bone density baseline at 51.
Well, makes that's no where sense. The medications it come makes, in, it makes no you know, sense. That's where, because there are medications, and we can talk a little bit about that when we talk about
I just sort of had that, as you were saying that, I just sort of dawned on me. We should be, now, we've said this too about hormones too, right? Women should be having their hormones tested when they're a teenager or in their 20s, so that way when they go into menopause, you sort of know what their hormone levels would look like for them, for that particular
profile.
Individual. It's exactly the same idea. Anyways, I'll let you go back to the T-score.
Well, I think now I kind of got lost.
You're talking about the osteopenia, osteoporosis, and we're picking up from there.
Oh, yeah. So, you know, with the osteopenia, now that I think about it, it's 2025 right now. Back when I was first practicing, I want to say somewhere between 2004 and 2010-ish, I'd have to look back at the literature, osteopenia was a negative 1.5. So there was a lot of women that didn't have osteopenia until they changed it, however they changed it to now osteopenia is negative 1.0, kind of like what happened with cholesterol, but we could go into all that later. But it did put a whole bunch of women overnight into osteopenia before it was 0 to negative 1.4 was normal bone loss. But now, you know, you think it is a pretty big, that is a pretty vast, I want to say range at negative 1.0, you know, basically being osteopenia now all the way to a negative 2.4, because I would treat a female in the negative, 2.2 a lot differently than somebody that's a negative maybe 1.0.
Yeah. You'd be more aggressive on the minus 2.4 than you would be on the 1.0. 1.0 completely. You wouldn't even worry about it too much if we're on the lower end of that, or technically the higher end, because with the negative number, the lower number is higher. I didn't realize that it was that it changed. I thought those reference ranges have been established for quite a while. I mean, that is quite a long time ago, I guess.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, like 20 years ago, 15 years ago, or something.
That is a while.
But it was interesting to see that, because anytime you hit 50, being a female, we're going to lose a little bit of bone, like you said.
Yeah.
So inevitably, there's going to be negative on your T score. The whole goal is to maintain. Yeah. It is very hard to build bone. I mean, you can do it. There's some ways to do it, but it is really hard, and it's very, slow. It's different than trying to build muscle, which can be slow in females, a little faster in guys.
Well, but even in men, it's still, you got to put in a lot of work to build that muscle. We wish men know how hard it is to build muscle. Women sort of think that it's really easy. You're going to lift a weight and you're going to just get all bulky. Not quite so much. It's really hard to do both. It's hard to build muscle, mm-hmm. and it's hard to build bone. That's why with the GLP-1s, that's why everyone needs to be very careful with that, because if you're in your 40s, 50s, or 60s and you're losing bone and muscle, it is going to be very difficult to get that tissue back. And we say all the time, sarcopenia, the number one factor for aging, at least one of them anyways, that is sort of directly related to what we're talking about.
Yeah, so I think right now I'm going to, maybe we'll talk about a little bit of a case that I brought here.
You gave the parameters. Let's dive into the ones that sort of made us want to do this episode.
Yeah, so this was the one is, I've been working with this patient for a number of years, and she's very tiny. I mean, she's under, just about 100 pounds. So, of course, and, she's fair female and very petite. So, of course, she's going to have some bone density loss. So our goal was really to try to, because her other primary care really wanted to put her on some medications, because once you hit, anywhere close to osteoporosis, they just, even in osteopenia, they want to put you on these medications. And I don't mind medications. Medications are important, mm-hmm. but you don't want to jump there. You want to work your way up there if it's necessary. So the last time she had it done in 2023, she did the spine. It was a negative 1.8. Now that we did it in 2025, it's a negative 1.8. So she didn't lose. She didn't gain, but she didn't lose. And then her left femoral neck was a negative 2.4. That actually increased up to being more negative. So she went from osteopenia technically to osteoporosis, because it went from a negative 2.4 to a negative 2.6. So that was a little worrisome to us when that came back. She felt really deflated. To be honest, I was okay with it just because she didn't lose. Because she's, we'd only really probably been working on this together for about maybe less than a year. So we hadn't, we'd been a little bit more aggressive with it, a little bit less than a year. So I didn't feel like that was a long enough time to actually improve the bone density. But the fact that she didn't lose was I thought was a win in some respects. So that's where, but back to, I didn't finish all of her data here. So her spine stayed the same at negative 1.8. The left femoral neck went from, a negative 2.4 to this one was a negative 2.6. But it was interesting, her right femoral neck went from a negative 2.3 to a negative 2.2. So based on the numbers, it looked like it improved. Now there are factors of error, what they call white noise. So does that mean that it really improved, or did it really just stay the same because they didn't use the same machine? She went to the same place, but it doesn't mean they used the same machine. Mm-hmm. It wasn't the same radiology person that was interpreting it. And so there is a little bit margin for movement on there. It's not perfect. But what I find is a lot of doctors will look at the basically the impression, which is only about three sentences long. Like, what is the impression of the radiologist? Where really you want to read the findings, which is why we wanted to explain what a T-score and a Z-score and what that means. Because on her last one, so she actually, according to the numbers here, she improved her right femoral neck from negative 2.3 to negative 2.2. But on the report here, it said, the report findings said that she actually, her right femoral neck got worse. It said her right femoral neck, there's been a negative change, but there isn't, because it actually improved if you were to take this. And I see this a lot.
So you said from minus 2.3 to minus 2.2.
And they said that was, that was a negative change. But it's not. It's a positive. Yeah. You know,
when
negative.
It's a, when it's a minus, when the number is less, it's actually going closer to zero. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it makes it an improvement as opposed to a decline. Now, do you think that's just a radiology mistake? Because they just, you know.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, these people are busy. They're fast. They're reading this. To be honest, I'm sure if you asked any radiologist, I should ask some, they don't probably see people improve their bone density when they read a DEXA scan. They're always seeing that it's getting, you know, a little bit worse.
But we've seen quite a few people with their bone density improve, which is why this is a big deal. Because another one that I had recently, I talked about it on another podcast, it was the last one or the one before, she was supposed to send me she did it from an outside provider. She was supposed to send me the DEXA so we could do this. She didn't send it to me yet. But her, based on just the percentage change, her T-score improved by 18%. Oh. Now she's also just like your patient here, you know, 90 pounds, you know, 97 pounds, I think is like her walk around weight. She specifically came to me because her sister is in Italy doing a similar hormone replacement bone density program. Mm-hmm. And she's sort of copying what her sister's doing. She's doing her part. She's lifting weights three or four days a week. She's walking with a weighted vest. She's got a pretty good protein intake on a daily basis. And her bone density, she was thrilled. Her bone density went up by 18.2%. But I have not seen the numbers yet. So I'm wondering, I would love to see where that T-score, you know, what that looks like as far as the numbers go.
Oh, yeah, me too. No, that would be amazing. Because that's 97 pounds. That's really fantastic. Yeah.
Now, hormone replacement-wise, we, on purpose, she's very petite, so we are a little conservative with the estrogen. Of course, she's taking some progesterone, but on purpose, we increased her testosterone. Mm-hmm. On her last lab work, her testosterone was on the reference range was 128. But her and I talked about that, and as long as she could tolerate it from a cosmetic perspective, don't want to break out, don't want to grow any hair on the chin, you know, those kind of things, I told her we're going to push that testosterone up there a little bit higher anyways. And, you know, it's been a year and a half since her last DEXA. She just had one done, and it improved by 18%. So is that hormones? Is that lifting weights? Is that a good protein diet? Is that walking with a weighted vest? To be honest, it's probably all of those
things. It's all of it. And so that's a good thing to talk about right now is before you're jumping up to medication, you know, there are other lifestyle factors or you can do in combination with.
Now, do you think that those medications are going to make her bone density increase by 18%?
No, because the medications, so even the bisphosphates, what's that injection you do every 6 months, they don't build, technically the mechanism action is not to build bone. So you have osteoblasts, B-L-A-S-T-S, that builds bone, and then you have osteoclasts that break down bone, C-L-A-S-T-S, osteoclasts. The mechanism of action for those medications are they inhibit the osteoclast from breaking down bone. So it's a good medication for somebody that might be sedentary, maybe they have other risk factors that are promoting them an anti-inflammatory, you know, maybe they have more of an inflammatory lifestyle, so they're losing bone. So those medications can at least inhibit that. Where, and then it would be good if somebody were to do what, like you said, your patient did and try to actively build bone, but those medications, they don't build bone on their own. That's not how they're made.
Yeah, no, they don't increase bone density. So you have this teeter-totter. You have osteoblastic activity, osteoclastic activity. You want those to be relatively balanced. You're building it, you're breaking it down, you're building it, breaking it down, and it goes like this. So then your net bone density stays normal. Mm-hmm. But if you're, let's say, sedentary or whatever factor, and you're building your bone goes down, but your osteoclastic, the breaking down of the bone, goes up, then you're going to lose bone density. So you're saying that the medications basically inhibit this part. Mm-hmm. So it sort of goes like that.
Exactly.
Sort of. Mm-hmm. But you're not really building. It's sort of like this. So if this side is up here, you're reducing this side, but this side doesn't go up.
Yeah, exactly. So in somebody, you know, in the right cases, I do think it's that medication can be really important.
Sure. Yeah,
you know,
of course.
There's other side effects.
Yeah, and like really serious,
but it could
really serious
ones. It could be really, especially in a particular individual that, you know, may not be able to have the lifestyle that we want, like your patient, to be able to, or even taking certain supplements or changing their lifestyle.
Someone's got an injury or they got something where they can't move as much.
You know, people, everybody's different, you know, everybody's different. So I do think that that would be beneficial. But you think about why do we have osteoclasts? So if I'm doing some heavy jumping or something, you know, I'm going to break down a little bone, and the osteoclasts come in. They actually do break it down, and then the osteoblasts come in and make it stronger.
Yeah.
So it is kind of like almost like you, what's an analogy, like you kind of liquefy the cement, but then you make it stronger.
Right.
So
right.
It's so it is important to have that osteoclastic activity. So I wouldn't necessarily jump into altering that unless we knew it was, you know, truly necessary. So,
it's really funny how the body works that way, because the same thing happens with muscle. You know, you're, you know, lifting weights, you actually are tearing the muscle fibers, which is why it hurts. You know, a little bit of lactic acid buildup and whatever, but you're actually tearing the muscle fibers, which creates an acute inflammatory process, and your body has to go in there, heal the torn muscle fibers, and then it builds back bigger and stronger on the other side. You know, so our bodies are meant to be stressed on a regular basis. And our, you know, we were sort of alluding to it on the last episode, and our comfort society, right? It's very easy not to put your body through those physical stressors. And we, you know, as humans, we just sort of decline very rapidly as a result.
No, yeah, absolutely. So that's why, but this patient, we hadn't really been actively working on her bone density. Mm-hmm. It's really had been a short amount of time before we did the follow-up, the 2023. But it's, I had written down the weighted vest because I wanted her to do more walking. I really feel like for women, walking is awesome for your bone density. But if you put that, but if you're fair and petite, if you put that vest on, then you're really putting more pressure because it's my body on gravity on the ground, which is going to help build up that
and
bone density.
And you're supporting that weight right around your, you know, your pelvic girdle, your spine, your hips, that whole area is having to support that weight. And honestly, it's something you can start with no weight, then you add a little bit of weight and a little bit more and a little bit more and a little bit more. And I mean, really, I've seen a few clips on social media where women said they've improved their bone density just by doing that.
I think that would, yeah. So we talked about that. We talked about some supplementation. You had talked earlier about vitamin D and K2. Mm-hmm. I think that's an excellent thing. I'm sure a lot of people know about that.
Yeah, I think vitamin D sort of is, you know, everyone, the secret is out on vitamin D, especially since COVID for sure.
But then K2, I don't, maybe the secret's out on that too, but K2 helps you. So you have the vitamin D, which, you know, helps with that calcium absorption.
Yep.
And then the K2 makes that calcium get redirected into the bones as opposed into the arterial walls of your heart for atherosclerosis. So that's why if you're going to do vitamin D, it's really good to do it with vitamin K2.
And you don't have to do the two together, but it's sort of like, you know, two for the price of one sort of thing. You're getting a little bit extra benefit. It's not like a precursor or anything. It's just something that you include because they both have an impact on calcium metabolism. So everyone's like, no, you have to take it with, you know, with K2, but I think it's a good idea. Mm-hmm. You don't have to do it. Now, vitamin D, where would you, you know, talk a little bit about a dosing range for vitamin D? Someone that is normal bone density versus someone who's osteoporotic, is there a change there as far as the vitamin D dosing amount?
Oh, no. Usually you can, you know, you do a blood test on vitamin D, see where their levels are at, and that way you don't, then you can dose it. That way you don't go too high and then keep testing on it.
Where do you like to see the vitamin D? I think I saw someone the other day talking a range like 60 to 80, something like that.
Minimum is 55. They're 55. That's okay. Yeah. I like to see it up to 70, but sometimes if it goes a little higher than that, I worry that it's going to go over 100, and you know, you're not checking them that often. You might check their vitamin D once every 6 months, or some doctors do it once a year. So when you're getting into like the 80s and the 90s for that vitamin D level,
the next time it's going to be elevated.
Yeah. And yeah, mine was, remember, I did.
Yeah, yours is 122. Yeah. You know, honestly,
I was taking it like crazy.
Since,
so bad.
You know, over the last few years since 2020, honestly, I've seen that more than I've ever seen it. I've probably seen it now at least a few dozen times, at least, you know, mm-hmm. people having a higher, the highest one I've seen yet was 232. Mm-hmm. Someone was, you know, 232.
That's the highest. Yeah. I've never seen that.
I don't know. Do you even know what vitamin D toxicity looks like? I've never seen vitamin D toxicity.
I know it can be hard on the kidneys, but I've never seen, somebody with higher, you know, vitamin D and having lower kidney function. But I know there's a few different things there. But
I've never seen anything like that. I don't think
it's
ever.
It's not soluble, so you don't want. Too much.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I give some people really high dose vitamin A, and you look it up and it's like hypervitaminosis, and you know, all these things can have liver hepatitis and inflammation of your liver and bone pain and all these different things. I've given people some pretty high dose of vitamin A for skin problems and
you
different
monitor
things.
It, right?
Well, of course.
It's under guidance.
Of course. But there's a little bit of, you know, I mean, we're talking a few, you know, hundreds of thousands of international units for vitamin A. But that was the high. And she said she was sort of just taking it, you know, kind of like you, just a little haphazardly. And it was literally
a lot of cold and flus going around because vitamin D is great for your immune system. So maybe I'm my worst patient. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, like I said, you tested it 122. Yep. Now you just back off a little bit, you know, or take it every other day, and then it goes back to normal. But, you know, somewhere that 60 to 80 ish range. Yeah, so that way you keep it there and it doesn't just keep climbing.
No, that's a. And oh, I wanted to ask you, what do you think about calcium or calcium supplementation?
Well, I think that that's one of those things that has changed quite a bit. So vitamin D is sort of taking the front seat, and high dose calcium supplementation, 1200 milligrams, is sort of like a thing of the 90s, right? People have been told how much calcium to take 1200 milligrams. I think the newer research is sort of dissuading people from taking high dose calcium. Now, I don't know where an optimal number should be. Maybe, less than 500. I'd have to look
at. You mean as supplementation?
As far as supplementation, yeah. What do you think about actual calcium supplementation?
I like calcium supplementation. Calcium as a molecule is huge. So taking 1,200 milligrams of calcium was like ginormous, tablets that nobody wanted to do that. They'd cut them in half. But there's so many different types of calcium. There's calcium oxalate, which I don't think that does anything for your bones. Citrate I do think helps with the bones, but it can also cause a little bit of constipation if you're not balancing it with magnesium, which magnesium is another unsung hero for bone density. But I usually will tell women, if you're going to supplement with calcium, let's try to hit 500. Try to hit 500 and then really look at your dietary calcium, because that's where you want to hit at least 500 during the day. And that's pretty easy, because there's lots of different forms of, good, foods that have calcium. I mean, nuts have calcium and magnesium.
Almonds, lots of calcium in almonds. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, Greek yogurt. So, looking at trying to get at least 500 milligrams of calcium and then maybe 500 milligrams of calcium citrate. And then you add in that magnesium, because magnesium citrate helps your bowels go if you're a constipated gal. Yeah. And then if you take calcium, that'll help kind of bind you up. So you want to have that balance between the two. But then they're also really good for your bones.
Yeah.
But I wanted to ask you about what you thought about calcium supplementation.
Oh, well, I think, like I said, it's since we've been in practice, it used to be 1,200 milligrams standard. And now people are, at least doctors like you and I, are not recommending that anymore. Just in general. And I think it has something to do with pushing atherosclerosis, what we were talking about earlier with the vitamin K2. Vitamin K2 and vitamin D, I think, has sort of overtaken really what this calcium supplementation was meant to do before. The whole point of using vitamin D is that your body can't really do anything with calcium unless it has enough vitamin D. If you don't have enough vitamin D, you can take all the calcium you want, and it might actually hurt you potentially more than it helps you. So I think, we've noticed this shift, just with our practice alone, that people are a little bit more educated, and maybe now, since we used to be in practice, there wasn't really much of the internet early in the early 2000s, and now social media and everything is everywhere. So now I think people are kind of up to speed on that a little bit more. They're learning a lot faster than they used to, anyways.
And I know with menopause, when estrogen goes down, we'll talk about that and hormone replacement. But you think about, why does the body pull calcium out of the bones?
Calcium is interesting. So you do a CBC, a chem panel, you have a calcium number on there. That number doesn't really reflects your bones, I guess. But it's your body needs to keep that calcium level in your blood at a very, very tight range, because calcium, potassium, all those electrolytes your body uses on some very specific molecular functions, where if that calcium goes too high or too low, you're in big trouble. Mm-hmm. Your potassium goes too high or too low. Like we used to live in the desert, you get dehydrated or something, your electrolytes get thrown off, and you can have like cardiac arrest and stuff. That can be really dangerous. So your body is always going to pull, even for like a pregnant mom, your body's always going to pull that calcium out of those bones as it needs it, if it needs it.
Well, what I remember is that, because your blood needs a certain pH,
right.
So calcium is a buffer. So if your blood is trying to get a more acidic, and that pH in your blood cannot deviate or you'll die.
7.4 on the nose. Yeah.
It
never changes.
It has to stay there.
Your blood pH. No, see, that's keep going, because I have a comment about that.
So the body will pull that calcium out of the bones to buffer and keep that pH. So if you have an acidic lifestyle, like let's say you're drinking a lot of soda, that's very acidic. You're eating, maybe you know, a lot of
candy, sugar, yeah,
sugar, refined sugar. Carbohydrates. Maybe you're a smoker that mm-hmm. can really kind of acidify the blood. So if you're having more of an an inflammatory lifestyle, then your body's going to be pulling more calcium out of the bones. But if you can change and create more of an anti-inflammatory lifestyle, then your body won't feel like so necessary.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot about the alkaline diet, eating more alkalinizing foods. They have like test strips and things. What do you think about that kind of science?
Well, I think the saliva, urine. I think it's kind of hard to really tell if that's really your blood pH.
Well, that's my point, is that the blood pH never changes. The blood pH, your body goes through great lengths to maintain 7.4 no matter what. Okay, no matter what. Your saliva, your urine, those things can change quite a bit, mm-hmm. but your blood pH never changes. Okay, there's a lot of energy devoted to keeping your blood pH at an A. So 7.4, if you're looking at an acid-base scale, 0 or 1 to 14, 7 is the middle. That's a neutral number, right? So below 7, it is an alkaline solution, an acidic solution, and then above 7 would be an alkaline solution. So the blood is always slightly alkaline at a 7.4. If you're, let's say, hydrochloric acid, which is in our stomach, that's got a pH of 1. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that stuff will burn a hole in the table if you put it on the table. Like literally, it'll burn a hole right through the table. Where you have, let's say, something like sodium hydroxide, which is NaOH, like a chemical thing, that would be on the 14, which would be on the other end of the alkaline scale. Also very caustic, also burn a hole in the table. Like literally burn it right through the wood. Those things, we can't touch it with our fingers because it's so, blood, of course, you can touch 7.4. It's neutral, so it's not going to burn our fingers. Now, I think you're right, though. There are some foods that can create, sort of an alkaline environment. But your blood pH, the point is of that is your blood pH never changes. No, it's always going
to
be 7.4.
But your body's trying to maintain that. So if you have an anti-inflammatory lifestyle, then that's going to be less calcium pulled out of your bones.
So point is, if you're eating a lot of vegetables and plants are very alkalinizing, that's technically a good idea to do, but it's not going to manipulate your blood pH at all. It might manipulate your saliva. It might manipulate your urine, mm-hmm. But it's not going to change the blood pH. That number is going to stay the constant, maybe a little bit, 7.3, 7.2, whatever, but for the most part, it's going to keep it. I don't know how we got onto that subject. But
Well, I was saying, thinking about, why are we pulling calcium out of the bones?
Sure.
Yeah,
well, bone is also sort of a reservoir, if you think about it. Your body can, like you said, it has access to it whenever it needs it.
Yeah. And of course, also, like you were saying, menopause, should we talk about menopause now? Or estrogen or hormone replacement?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Because I do feel like you said, for your patients and my patients, that the hormone replacement, which is what we did with this patient right now, is we're actually going to readjust her hormones so that we can make bone density part of her goal.
So what are you going to do for her specifically?
Well, we're going to do a little more estrogen. So she was on a little bit, a little bit for more, symptoms of menopause. But this mm-hmm. time we're going to kind of balance that estrogen and progesterone, because estrogen has a huge effect on bone density. So that was kind of our rationale behind that. And then adding in some testosterone, which will help with that muscle mass. Yep. So, because she does do a lot of working out. So I will have to give that to her. She does do a little bit too much, probably exercise, bike. That doesn't do a lot for your bone density. It's mm-hmm. great for your joints, though, and it's great for your brain, but it's not really great for your bone density. So she's going to do the weighted vest.
Is she going to do the weighted vest?
Yep, she's got the weighted vest. She actually was wearing it when we had our call, had our video. We actually did a video for that one appointment, and she was wearing it. It was really awesome.
That's adorable. Yeah, really awesome. How much is a weighted vest?
I think the one she has now is like 5 pounds or and you can work, you can put little mm-hmm. little things in there to work your way up.
Yeah, and I would encourage anyone that is contemplating a weighted vest, that weighted vest should get heavier over time because now your body's going to acclimate. If it's always 5 pounds, it does not take long for our body to adapt to that type of a stressor, so that weight actually has to keep going up. You and I haven't rucked in a while.
Did the other day.
Well, where we're actually purposely carrying weight in our backpack.
You were I picked up the backpack because we usually will do a long walk into town, and it's about 3 miles to 3 to 3.5 miles to walk into town, and then we'll walk back. But you'll carry, because he'll carry a lot of my stuff, so maybe I'm not rucking. But I lifted up your backpack. It was is heavy.
Yeah, but we used to do it.
It must have been like 20 pounds.
It wasn't quite
maybe
that
15?
Much.
But well, we used to, heavy
we,
to
used
me.
To, we used to live at the other place and we'd walk around the lake. Mm-hmm. That I put 40, 50 pounds on that one. You know, and what'd you have? You had, what, 8?
Yeah, I think I went up to 16, but it really did hurt my shoulders. I'm such a baby. So I think 8 was really good, 8 to 30. Yeah. So usually I think I stayed right around 8 to 10. So yeah, I need to get back into it because I put all my stuff in your backpack and I'm just like foot loose and fancy free. Let's go for a walk.
Yeah. So yeah, you're right. I'm carrying the backpack, but you know, it doesn't, that's not really that heavy.
It's, we got our computers in there. We got dog food in there. Snacks.
Yeah, we got the whole house packed up in a backpack.
But jackets, because we live in the Pacific Northwest.
But we do all year round, though. We our average is we, you know, just walking alone from a bone density perspective, you couldn't do anything better for yourself. Just walking to start, and then, you know, like your patient is adding on that weight and, you know, progressive overload, that weight is supposed to go up over time. You and I average easily in the winter 25 miles a week, 100 miles a month. That's sort of like our bare minimum. In the summertime, it probably close to doubles, would you say?
Yeah, because we've been doing a lot more walking this year, so we'll see what, now that it's springtime and coming into summertime.
We've done, since last September, we've done more walking since last September than we ever have. But we enjoy it, though. Walking has been a lot of fun. Yeah. And like I said, you're forcing your body to have to adapt, and we're walking long distances. You know, sometimes
it's flat. I mean, it's not like you need to go up a hill. I mean, hiking up a hill, sure, that's great, but it's flat. It's very comfortable. You know, when you're walking, that reduces your cortisol. It reduces your blood pressure.
It makes you more insulin sensitive.
Helps with anxiety.
Yeah, reduces blood sugar. I mean, there's a lot wrapped up into just going for a walk. Now everyone's talking about on social media, you know, three 5-minute walks or 10-minute walks a day. It's something we enjoy to do, and you know, it's actually, you know, it's good for our muscles, good for our bones. So
now they have, which is cool, they're called walking pads. You can buy and like store it under your bed, and you can pull it out and walk on it. You know, because a treadmill is huge and heavy, it's so heavy. Where the walking pads seem like a really good idea for people too.
Sure. Yeah, especially if you're in an area where you don't have access, or you know, it's not a fun place to walk or something.
Watching TV.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Did we cover enough on DEXA scans? We kind of got off track there a little bit.
I think so. There was one here, like I said, we wanted to show.
Why don't you talk about the, well, let's leave the male patient. Talk about the comparison between the two, because you said they're the same age.
Yeah, so I have this patient here, and she's the same age as my other patient, and she's not as petite. I mean, she's thin, but she's tall. So she's, you know, just tall, where this patient here is just about 100 pounds, you know, 5'1". Where, you know, this patient here is easily 5'6", 5'7". And
but
so
still the same weight, though?
I'm not the same weight, but she weighs more.
Same age.
You know, probably, ratio of what her body, you know, her body size, you know, she's tall, but she is, you know, she is thin. And, oh, my goodness, she was, her bone density was amazing in her late 50s. In fact, she had a positive bone density. So this was the one, so her spine T-score was a 0.7. There's no negative there. There's no negative. It's a 0.7. I remember I need to put on my glasses right now, but when I first read it, I had to like look like, how come it's not negative? But she actually 0.7, so she has positive. And then her femoral neck was a 0.5, and they did, this one was from a different radiology place compared to this one here. And her actual total left hip was positive 1.1.
So all three of them were positive. So her spine and both femoral necks were all positive. Have you ever seen that before?
I have seen that in a couple of
people. I mean,
if
you did it on a young enough person, it would be
sure,
that way.
Oh, sure. Yeah. But I have seen it on maybe I can count it on one hand, but I have seen it on a couple of people. But this one was really interesting to me because she does a lot of walking. She's got some cute little dogs. I think one might have passed since then. But she does walking every day, every day, usually twice a day. And she takes them for long walks. And that's really her exercise and yoga. Yoga was another one too, because anything, you know, that was helping her with the bone, your bone density through muscle building. Because yoga, you can really build some muscle. It's tough.
Yeah.
But it was, she does a lot of walking. And I think that she also has a really good genetics, because I had asked her about her grandparents, you know, about any aunts, her mother. They never had any bone issues. Where the other patient, granted, she's petite and, you know, and fair, where this patient here is petite also. She's just taller. But she had had, the previous patient had some history of family you know, family osteoporosis, but was that because of lifestyle?
Right.
Or was that because of genetics? It's always hard to tease that apart. But this one was really, really amazing, I think, because she said she's always walked.
Yeah, sure. Well, I still think the baseline should be done way earlier than 51. I think those baselines should be done in the 20s or even in the 30s. But, you know, that's insurance medicine for you. Mm-hmm. Anyways, that was really fascinating. It's very interesting. Two women the same age and relatively completely different bone densities. Like I said, I don't know if I've ever seen one that has all three positive scores. I mean, that's really impressive. Now, granted, like I said, you're not going to, if you looked at a teenager, of course, they probably have positive scores, but a woman in her late 50s, you wouldn't expect that to happen. No.
And that's why I brought the one from the fella here, is a lot of men don't get their DEXA scans done for bone density, and because, you know, men don't usually get bone density issues, but there are some genetic conditions and the other conditions we talked about where they might lose bone from some metabolic conditions. Sure. This patient in particular had had some bariatric surgery a long, you know, while ago, and so he actually had quite a bit of, you know, in his right femoral neck, his T score was a negative 2.4. He was almost osteoporosis. Yeah. And so we talked.
And he's 66, I believe.
And we had talked a lot about that, you know, for him, you know, the bariatric surgery was amazing for him. It reversed diabetes. He lost a lot of weight. And he's got both sides of his family have high diabetes and mm-hmm. obesity. And for him himself, he was, you know, right there pretty much in diabetes.
So metabolically, it was the right choice
for him.
Yeah.
But we really need to. And I think this is where they didn't really, you know, I don't know a lot about bariatric surgery, but I don't, you know, years later, you have to continuously work on that nutrition with someone because he kind of got a little complacent. His wife is, you know, his wife doesn't need to worry about her nutrition. She looks awesome and she doesn't really eat great. So he kind of was doing his own thing, but she felt good. And she's, you know, they kind of had a little bit of, you know, they have a little bit of separation in their lives in terms of dietary. So he just kind of stopped, you know, really his nutrition wasn't that great.
Yeah.
So we had to really kind of, so we worked on that and then we did another one and he's improved it a little bit. His spine is great. It's perfect. No bone. Now has no bone loss in his spine now. And his left femoral neck is a negative 1.7. And then we did improve that T score. Now he's in osteopenia. He's at a negative 2.3 for that right hip. So
minus 2.4 to minus 2.3.
So he did improve it. So I do think that through the nutritional processes, we've been able to improve it for him. And I will say on a little side note, I know I'm going on a long time. So his, you know, a lot of people, none of us are completely symmetrical. There's always going to be one, you know, one side that's a little less bone density than the other. So I'm left-handed. This gentleman's left-handed. So that's why, he has his left femoral neck is better because he's left-legged, he's left-handed. That's why the other patient, her right side, she's right-handed. That's why her right side was a little stronger, had more bone density than her left. And I do seem to notice that it seems like if there is a discrepancy, it's always that dominant side tends to have better bone density.
That's mm-hmm. interesting. Yeah.
So I'm like, in your mind, when you're walking, just think of your left side. Just think of your non-dominant side.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting.
Just an interesting thing of just having seen so many.
Sure. Yeah. That's very important. Comes up all the time. Hopefully that gave some people some insights. You know, if you have any comments, write them down in the comment section below. We'd love to hear from you. We'd love to answer any questions that we can.
And below, do we have the newsletter? Because we just created it. My little labor of love is a newsletter.
Oh, yeah. It'll be in the description down below. Cool. There's a link there for changed it. It's the Progress Your Hormones newsletter. Mm-hmm. Our business is Progress Your Health, so the newsletter now is Progress Your Hormones. So. If you're interested, the link should be down below as well. Until next time, I'm Dr. Mackey.
And I'm Dr. Valerie.
Take care. Bye-bye.